How are we? How we doing? All right, got some clapping going on. You guys ready to do some church? All right, still got people coming in, getting settled. As people are getting settled, I just want to say last week for me was amazing. God completely exceeded my personal expectations for Serve Week. And it's been amazing to hear the stories of impact that people have been willing to share. And those are stories that have come from the folks that suited up and led teams out into our community with our partner organizations. They've come from people from our partner organizations. They've come from people who our partner organizations are serving. And they've come from some of you all who served. And nothing but impact, nothing but Jesus meeting us right where we are, Him taking our little ordinary offering, the time slot that we allotted for Serve Week, and doing something powerful with it. I just want to say this, I'm proud to be a part of a church that is out in the community serving and making an impact. I'm proud to be a part of this community of people that calls itself Severn. So good on you for partnering with us during Serve Week. Can't wait to do it again next summer. Amen. All right. Man, we're already clapping. It's going to be a good day. So last Sunday we wrapped up our journey through the book of Philippians. Next Sunday we're going to kick off a brand new series that I think is going to encourage you, help you see some things, help you move forward from where you're at and navigate some of the things that maybe you're going through. But in the meanwhile, I want to talk with you about something that I think everybody has on their mind. And I think if you are a parent of small children going through this heat wave, this has been on your mind because people are getting stir crazy because you're stuck inside. Anybody else looking for some rest out there? Amen. Uh-huh. Where are my parents and little kids at? I know y'all need some rest. And I'm right there with you. So let me tell you a story. About 6 years ago, my wife and I, we welcomed our fourth daughter into our family, into this crazy world. And from the beginning, from the onset, this pregnancy, with everything associated with this pregnancy, was unique, based on our past experience. From not knowing what we were going to name child number four, because you're fresh out of names after three daughters. All right, we had no name in the name bank. Sarah started hemorrhaging really early on, and this quickly became what was called a high-risk pregnancy. And then at 30 weeks, her water broke, and she was placed on hospital bed rest. And I'm here to tell you that completely turned our world upside down. And from start to finish, this was an all-around different kind of experience. And having Sarah on bed rest interrupted everything. Interrupted our ideals, our rhythms, our routines. She was a full-time stay-at-home mom at the time. Shout out to all y'all doing that. It's more than a full-time job. You're underpaid. You're underappreciated. Rest is coming, y'all. I got some good news for you this morning. We love you all. She also was working part-time as a nurse up in Baltimore. And during this season of her life, she would do neither of those things. And then I was at the time running an English language development program at a middle school and being quickly thrust into this single dad of three kids lifestyle. And I'm here to tell you, it is not easy. If you're a single parent, I got nothing but respect for you. You're strong, you're determined. And I'm telling you what, you are willing to go through the drive-thru at McDonald's or Popeyes on the drop of a dime. You hear me? And I'm here to tell you, it is okay. Supersize it, y'all. That's what I'm saying. All right? So this interrupted absolutely everything to the degree that I even had to put my job on hold and took an extended leave of absence to be single dad of three. And what we didn't realize is this was just the beginning of a season that would have me more restless, more overwhelmed, more exhausted than I had ever been. And no matter what I tried, I couldn't speed up the process, right? I couldn't make things easier. I couldn't put us closer to being done with this season we were in. And it was to the degree where I actually ended up in a doctor's office with some stress-related health issues going on, all right? And to the degree that we actually had to postpone the scheduled C-section because I got so deathly ill. I mean, I thought God was calling me home. I am not kidding. I was sick through all of this. And I have to attribute that to the degree of stress and restlessness that I experienced. So we're a couple days before the C-section, and as I mentioned earlier, we're fresh out of names. Name bank is broke as a joke. We're anticipating child number 4. I got nothing in the chamber. And that's when Sarah mentioned the name Kasiah, right? She pitches the name, and I'm thinking, all right, never heard that one before. Also, how do you spell it? And what are people going to say when they read it and try to say it? Like, is this going to be a thorn in her side for the rest of her life? At any rate, I wasn't immediately convinced until I heard what the name Kasiah means. And the name Kasiah means God is my refuge. And so at this point in time, things are on an upswing, so we thought. We got a name. We got a date for the C-section. Come on, somebody. This is good news. We're getting good reports from the doctors. It seems like light is at the end of the tunnel. And so the picture that I want to show you is a picture of things kind of at one of the worst places we were at. So the picture that's on the screen, you see my wife in the background. And that's our little Kasiah. She is attached to everything they could attach to her. And they're throwing every bit of medicine at her that they can throw at her. They're doing everything that they know how to do. Because here's what happened. At 7:49 a.m. on April 10th, 2013, Kasiah came into this world. She didn't cry. She couldn't breathe. And everything that I was witnessing as her dad, I loved her with everything I could love her with, everything I was witnessing. Doctors, nurses struggling to keep her alive was literally taking my breath away. We didn't get to hold her. We didn't really get to touch her. But all we got to see is doctors and nurses scrambling and making every effort they could possibly make to keep this little girl alive. And eventually, we ended up getting transferred up to Hopkins. And pretty immediately, we were told to say our goodbyes. And so I want to just pause there for a second, because when we chose Kasiah's name, we had no idea that it would end up serving as a constant reminder of where we can go when we're exhausted. You see, there's a root word in the opening verses of Psalm 57 from which Kasiah's name is derived. And I want to share that with you. Here's what the opening verses of Psalm 57 say. And mind you, they're written by a man named David. He's between a rock and a hard place. Things are not going well in his life. There's no clear pathway out. He's up against everything that you could imagine. He's stressed out and overwhelmed and tired. And he's sick and tired, frankly, of being tired. But here's what he says. Opening verses of Psalm 57, he says, "Be gracious to me, God. Be gracious to me, for I take refuge in you. I will seek refuge in the shadow of your wings until the danger passes. I call to God Most High, to God who fulfills his purpose for me." And so I'm here to tell you that I am so grateful that I know where to go when I'm exhausted. I'm also here to tell you that I don't go there immediately. I don't necessarily go there quickly. I get there eventually. But I'm thankful to know that I know where to go when I'm overwhelmed, when I'm exhausted, when my back is against the wall, when I'm amidst danger, and I don't feel like the danger is going to pass. But I'm here to tell you this, that this past year, Kasiah turned 6. Yeah, come on, somebody. Right? And I'm so thankful that the danger passed with Kasiah and that we got to celebrate her 6th birthday. And I'm so thankful that she loves lollipops and we owe the dentist all of our money, literally. And I'm kind of concerned because I'm the one with money. I've been fueling this passion of hers. And I'm concerned that maybe I'm enabling it. Because here's where I struggle. I have a hard time saying no to her because of what we've been through. But I'm working on it. Can you pray for me, somebody? You know what I'm saying? And what I know to be true for all of us sitting in this room, or whether you're listening online or you're watching online, is that it is absolutely difficult in 2019 to find rest. And I believe that because I think we're all under this universal plight. Look, our circumstances might be different, our situations might be different, but I know this, that the weight feels the same. And some of you came in here and I know you're exhausted and I know you're tired and I know you're restless and you might not even know why. Or some of you came in here and you're exhausted because life is unfolding at a pace that you feel like you can't keep up with and circumstances are playing out that you feel like you have absolutely no control over. Or maybe you're exhausted with your marriage or the financial pressure or your inability to live up to other people's expectations or the lack of direction in your life. The reality is this, at least this is what I believe, that all of us at some place or some time, to some degree or another, experience seasons of exhaustion, seasons of restlessness, seasons where we feel absolutely overwhelmed. And here's what I think you want when you feel exhausted. I think you want to find rest. You want the anxiety to come to a close. You want the despair in your life to disappear. And I want to show you this morning that I believe that through it all, you can find rest in a world that will knock you down and beat you up and leave you absolutely restless. I want you to see today that there is a place where you can unload your burdens and find rest. And I want you to see that God's heart for you, that Jesus' heart for you is that you would experience a life of rest. I believe with all my heart that Jesus doesn't want us to be exhausted. He wants us to find rest. He wants you to find rest. And here's the thing about Jesus. He's inviting absolutely anyone who feels restless and exhausted into his rest. But I need you to see today, it's important that we see this. Because there are some conditions. There are some things that Jesus is going to ask of you if you want to find the rest that he's offering. And simply stated, if there are conditions, what that means is rest becomes a choice. Does it not? And I believe that finding rest really just boils down to a matter of choice. And I'm convinced that in the text we're going to look at, Jesus clearly and simplistically outlines the choices that we can make in light of the stress and the restlessness that we experience. Go ahead and turn with me to Matthew chapter 11. I'm in verse 28, and I want you to hear what Jesus says to anyone who needs rest. So if that's where you're at, I want you to hear this personally. But if that's where you're not at, feel free to tune me out. I'm not going to make sense to you, but if you feel restless and overwhelmed, I want you to just lean in to what Jesus says in verse 28. He says, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." I think the first thing that's very clear in this text is that the rest Jesus offers requires self-awareness. Let me tell you what I mean. In response to our exhaustion, here's what Jesus says. He says something that's markedly different than maybe you've heard from anyone else in your life. He says, "Rest first." He doesn't say figure it all out and then rest. He doesn't say tie up all the loose ends and then rest. He doesn't say put in your 40 and then rest. He doesn't say live up to everyone else's expectations and then rest. He doesn't say get married, start a family, have kids, find the career, and then rest. He doesn't say get enough, make enough, do enough, and then rest. He says rest first. And the reason why I think Jesus is saying rest first is because there's not a person, there's not a pill, there's not a possession that will give you the rest that your life demands the way that Jesus can give you rest. And I think he's showing us this in such a disarming way. He's opening up the door to self-awareness in an extremely disarming way. And here's why I believe that. Listen to what he says. He says, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you something that you don't have." So show up, and I'm going to give you something that you don't have. And I think this is Jesus' indirect way of acknowledging the fact that life has beaten you up, life's got you down, relationships are hard, conflict is surrounding you, there's problems you feel like you're stuck in that you can't resolve. Jesus is saying, "I see how tired you are," and indirectly he's asking you to ask yourself the question, do you see how tired you are? Do you see how overwhelmed you are? Do you see how stressed out life has you? And in so doing, he's opening up space in your life for self-awareness. When Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are burdened," he's making it very clear that the only thing you need to come to Jesus is a self-awareness of your need. The only thing you need to come to Jesus is a self-awareness of your need. And self-awareness translates to admitting that you're not okay when you're not okay. that we need help when we need help. That sometimes, and I'm speaking to myself here, sometimes I overpromise and underdeliver. Can you relate? Sometimes I get angry at things that are so marginal and peripheral and don't really mean a whole lot, that I hurt people, the people that I say that I love. Sometimes I'm easily triggered. Come on, somebody, you know that's you. Sometimes I'm passive aggressive when I don't get my way. Got some friends in the crowd today. Sometimes I'm judgmental of people who don't believe like me, think like me, act like me, maybe vote like me, maybe talk like me, maybe share the same interests as I share. Or maybe you just hate asking for help, because that can be hard. But here's the thing. I think that if we're willing to admit some things that we really know we need to admit, that can lead to a season of rest that we know we want. And Jesus is showing us that self-awareness, the ability to admit that when we need help, sometimes, maybe most of the time, maybe all the time, we end up running to things that leave us more overwhelmed than when we started. But if we can admit these things, I think that can lead to rest. And here's what else that can mean. Addressing things in your life that are easy to ignore. Or correcting things in your life that are real easy to conceal because you're the only one that knows about it. Like if you're exhausted, maybe it's time to admit something that you've never admitted. Because the longer you hold on to something, the harder it holds on to you. And here's the thing, you can't address things that you won't admit. And you can't heal from things that you continue to conceal. Look, Jesus' heart for us as people is to give us rest from whatever has us restless. But it starts with admitting, first and foremost, that you are restless. And I want you to hear Jesus saying this directly to you if that's how you showed up today. I want you to hear Jesus speaking into your circumstances and into your life and addressing you personally. I want you to hear Jesus saying, come to me when you don't know how you're going to make ends meet. Come to me when you don't know how the story unfolds. Come to me when you're stuck against the wall because something's happening that you have zero control over. Come to me when your marriage is too much to bear. Come to me when you're in that season with your kids that you don't know and you don't know what to do about it. Come to me when you feel like you can't live up to anyone's expectations, let alone your own. Come to me when you feel exhausted and unsettled and angry, maybe with yourself. Come to me when you feel like you're hitting dead end after dead end. Come to me with your fear, your guilt, your shame. I believe this with everything that's in me, that if you're finding right now that your life is too hard to carry on your own, that nothing you're doing is yielding the results that you want, I am convinced that Jesus is the only one capable of easing that burden and giving you the rest that you need. Look, other things might distract you. More square footage might distract you. More income might distract you. More experiences might distract you. But Jesus is the only one who can give you rest. And the rest that Jesus offers requires self-awareness. But self-awareness, let's not fool ourselves. It's not an end in and of itself. You could become aware of all things and do nothing with the information that you have and do nothing about it. And I don't know if you guys would agree with this, but we probably don't like the guy who's aware that he's a jerk, but just continues being a jerk. Come on, somebody. You don't like it when people become aware of something that needs to be corrected and there's no course correction. So we got to do something about it. And that's why it's a choice. Self-awareness becomes a choice if it's actually going to lead to something, to yield some change in your life, right? And I think Jesus clearly shows us what we're supposed to do when we become aware of areas of our lives that need to change. Let's pick it up in verse 29. Jesus says, "All of you, take up my yoke and learn from me, because I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." All right, let me break this down for you. Because Jesus is using words like yoke. All right, I'm not talking about egg yolks. This is a different kind of yoke. In Jesus' day, a yoke would have been used to harness two oxen together. Oxen were stubborn and disorderly and strong-willed. Sound like anybody you know? But here's what the yoke would do. If you could effectively yoke two oxen together, here's what you could do. You could maximize their effort, and you would see two things happen. First, the yoke served as the means by which one of the most stubborn, self-willed animals on the planet became one of the most productive powerhouses on the planet. All right, and secondly, the design of the yoke would allow for more work to be accomplished from less effort. Who doesn't want to do more by doing less? Come on, somebody. It's okay to be like, yeah, that's me, definitely. That's where I'm at. I want to accomplish more by doing less. That's what the yoke allowed the oxen to do. But here's the catch. The oxen didn't sign up to have a yoke put around their necks. They saw it as something that inhibited their freedom, that gave them guardrails that they didn't establish for themselves. It wasn't necessarily something that they wanted. But here's what it was. If you look beyond the surface, the yoke is actually what unlocked the power and the potential of the oxen. It's what unlocked the purpose of the oxen. And I have yet to meet somebody that doesn't want power, potential, and purpose unlocked in their lives, right? And I think sometimes we feel most overwhelmed when you feel like you don't know what your purpose is, or you feel like you're being held back from realizing your full potential. I think those are seasons of our lives where we can feel most overwhelmed. And so I'm convinced that everybody wants purpose, and everybody wants to unlock their full potential, but I'm also convinced of this. Don't nobody want somebody else calling the shots. Right? It's not that we don't want purpose, it's that we don't want somebody else calling the shots. And so the yoke required a level of surrender in order for the oxen to realize its full potential. So when Jesus says, all of you take up my yoke and learn from me, because I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, here's what we see. We see that the rest Jesus offers, it requires surrender. To take up Jesus' yoke and surrender means that you simply choose to stop calling all of the shots in your life, and you begin this journey of allowing Jesus to call the shots in every area of your life. It also means that when you feel overwhelmed, you have a choice to make. You can run to the counterfeit places, right, that leave you more overwhelmed than when you started. You can run to entertainment, and you can run to experience, and you can run to substances, and you can run to whatever you decide or whatever you choose to run to that you know only is going to serve as a momentary feeling of relief and end up leaving you more exhausted than when you started. Or you can choose to take up Jesus' yoke, surrender to Jesus, and find rest amidst restlessness. Let me show you something. There's a story in an Old Testament book called 2 Chronicles. And 2 Chronicles is part of the storyline of Israel. And so it chronicles, right? It's called Chronicles. So it chronicles kings in Israel. Some of them were good, some of them were bad, some of them were extremely horrible. But there's this king in 2 Chronicles, his name is Asa. And for the first decade of his tenure as king, he picked up in the aftermath of a season of conflict and turmoil and struggle. But he had this 10-year window during which, here's what we read, here's what God gave King Asa during this 10-year window. The land was at peace, no one was at war with him, because God, listen to what God gave him. God gave him rest on every side. Rest in every area of the kingdom. Rest in every aspect of his life. And rest is what created the margin in Asa's life that allowed him to rebuild the cities of Judah. But here's what ends up happening. And you've probably experienced this, where you've had a season of rest, and then all of a sudden, you feel like you're at ease, and then all of a sudden something starts to unfold that's outside of your control. And that's exactly what happens in Asa's kingdom. All of a sudden, they went from being at rest on all sides to being under attack on all sides. And he found himself surrounded by enemies. Odds are stacked against him and his people, and he had a choice to make. And here's what happened. Here's what we read King Asa did in response to being surrounded on all sides, overwhelmed on all sides. He said something so simplistic, this is going to blow your minds. You know what he said when he needed help? He said, help. That's all he said, help. And here's what God did. Here's what God did. God responded, and it says that God gave them rest on every side. God gave them rest on every side. And it's not that God removed the obstacles. The enemies didn't disappear. The hailstorm that was mounting around the city of Judah didn't go away. Their financial tension didn't go away. The stress didn't go away. God gave them rest on every side despite all of that. And here's why. I think this is key. King Asa was living a life that was fully surrendered to God. And here's what the opening verses of chapter 15 say that make this clear in my mind. It says, "The Spirit of God came on Azariah, son of Oded. So he went out to meet Asa and said to him," Asa and all Judah and Benjamin, these are kingdoms in Israel, "The Lord is with you when you are with him. If you seek him, he will be found by you. But if you abandon him, he will abandon you." For many years, Israel had been without the true God, without a teaching priest, and without instruction. But when they turned to the Lord God of Israel in their distress, not despite their distress, not because their lives were stress-free, but in their distress and sought him, here's what happened. God was found by them. And look, even though Asa had all the authority in the land, he could have called the shots. He had an army of some 300,000 men. He could have suited up immediately and went to battle, but he didn't. He waited. And he allowed God to call the shots. And what we see in this story, what we see in this story is that when we surrender our lives to Jesus, he is more than willing to give us rest on every side, in every area of our lives. And this is not about Jesus removing all the obstacles or erasing our debt or getting us out of our current circumstances. This is about us experiencing rest on every side of our lives, in every aspect of our lives, despite our circumstances. And until we choose to take up Jesus' yoke and surrender to him, I don't think we're going to experience rest. I don't think anything we try outside of surrendering to Jesus will yield the results that we want in our lives. Look, it's not enough to just know about Jesus or understand some things about what he did or even pray to Jesus. You need to surrender to him and follow him wherever he leads. You need to surrender to him when your life has got you overwhelmed and stressed out and all you can say is help. And when you truly surrender to Jesus, here's what I think will happen. He'll give you rest on every side. But here's what I know about surrender. It ain't easy, right? Anybody else have a toddler in their house? Do they surrender? Yeah, didn't think so. If you figure out how to get them to surrender, let me know, because that's something we're working on. We would love the silver bullet for that one. Surrender is not something you're going to be immediately good at. And let me just apply this to me. I've been trying, I emphasize that, trying to follow Jesus for the past 15 years, and I am still learning how to surrender. Ask anybody in my home whether or not I am good at surrender, and they will tell you I am not. Right? I'm not even convinced I'm ever going to get good at it or master it. But here's one thing I am convinced of. I'm better. I'm convinced that I am better at it today than I was yesterday. I'm also convinced that I am nowhere near where I want to be. I'm just convinced that I'm getting better because it's a daily surrender. It's a momentary surrender. And I believe that Jesus is willing to meet me right where I am and allow me to learn through surrender to trust him next time because he came through when I trusted him the last time. And I'm confident that Jesus is helping me through people that are able to speak in my life or through him just plainly speaking into my life, see areas of my life that need to change. Right? This is a process. This is a process. Becoming transformed by Jesus is a process. Change in our lives is a process. And I think it involves an interplay between self-awareness and surrender that allows us to learn from Jesus. And learning from Jesus isn't accruing a bunch of knowledge about him. It's not trying to model your life after things that he did and doing good things in the community. Even though all of those things are highly relevant in your following of Jesus, it really boils down to us being with Jesus Because when we're with Jesus, we can be transformed by Jesus. And the only way you can be with Jesus is if you surrender to Jesus. And here's why surrender leads to rest. Jesus ends this passage by saying that his yoke is easy and his burden is light. And I have got to ask the question when I read that. How, knowing what I know about the end of Jesus' life, how could he possibly say that his yoke is easy and his burden is light? When Jesus spoke these words to the people he spoke them to, he was public enemy number one. He had way more enemies than friends. There was a plot to kill him and to murder him and to eliminate him that was unfolding as the days went by. And just 2 years after he claimed that his yoke was easy and his burden was light, one of the people closest to him, one of his core group of followers, dimed him out. He was put on trial and he was executed. Look, on the surface, I don't see anything easy or light about what Jesus' life exemplifies. I don't see Jesus' lifestyle choices as easy or light. So how could he possibly say this? How could Jesus say that it's easy or light? What they didn't know back then that we know right now is that Jesus was, what he was doing is he was on mission to make his burden easy and light by completely taking on the burden of our guilt, our sin, our shame, our mishaps, the way that we've mistreated people, the way that we've let people down, the way that we've let ourselves down. What they didn't know then that we have clarity on now is that through Jesus' death, he would take our burdensome, heavy yoke upon himself so that the yoke that we experience could be easy and light. Jesus allowed himself to be completely overwhelmed by our yoke so that we could find rest in his. And some of us are here today and the idea of surrender is so off-putting. You can't imagine someone else telling you what to do or calling the shots or deciding what the next step of your life should look like. And rightfully so. I think some of us have allowed people to speak into our lives and give direction to us, and we've been burned, we've been bullied, and we've been abused. But if you came here today and you can't envision surrendering to Jesus, I've got to ask you the question. And I'd encourage you, ask yourself this and answer it honestly. Are you happy? Are you happy with the way that your life is today? Are the things you're doing putting you at a place where you feel like you're at rest and you're not working for approval and you're not trying to live up to anyone else's expectations? Look, if the answer to that is, if you can't answer the question, yes, when you're asking yourself, am I happy with the way that my life is today? Maybe it's time to surrender to Jesus. There's another group of people here that I'd like to address, that I'd like to talk to, and I'm actually in that group of people. Some of us are here today, and you know what we've been doing? We've been following Jesus for a long time. And the reality is we're still exhausted. We're not experiencing Jesus' rest. We're tired. We're beat down. We're stressed out. And maybe it's because there are areas of our lives that we continue to insist on doing things our way. Maybe there are areas of our lives that we haven't actually surrendered to Jesus. And I got to ask, have you surrendered your ideals, your views, your opinions on relationships, on sexuality, on finances, on generosity, on the way that you're supposed to treat people who have different beliefs, views, or perspectives than you have? Look, if you're still exhausted, even though you're following Jesus, I got to remind you, Jesus isn't going to force his yoke on you. He's inviting you to come to him and take it on yourself. This isn't a command, it's an invitation. And because it's an invitation, it's a choice that you get to make as to whether or not you want to put on Jesus' yoke and surrender to him. If you came here overwhelmed and exhausted, and nothing you seem to do is leading you to a place of rest, I believe with all of my heart that Jesus doesn't want to leave you there. He does not want you to stay there. And all it requires, all this rest that Jesus offers requires, is that you have enough self-awareness to admit that you're restless, that you're tired, that you're exhausted. Frankly, that you're sick and tired of being sick and tired. And all it requires is that you choose to surrender to Jesus. Maybe today for the first time. And if you've already given your life to Jesus, maybe today for the next time. Because surrender is a one time at a time kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? And if you're here today and you've never surrendered your life to Jesus, or if you have and you still feel exhausted, you can take the next step in your journey. I'd invite you, come up during our last song. Talk with somebody. Maybe have a conversation that you've been reluctant to have. Have a conversation with somebody up here. Start admitting things that you know you need to admit. Allow somebody to pray with you today. I'm convinced, this is my conviction, that if you decide to surrender to Jesus today, you are going to find the rest that you know you need and you've been looking for in all kinds of people, in all kinds of places. So I'd invite you, come up during our last song and take a step towards finding the rest that only Jesus can give you. Amen.